From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for July 14th, 2023. Checking the calendar, the Brew Crew is on the road this next week in Cincinnati and Philadelphia. And just to confirm, we are the fest capital of the world. This weekend, you can go to Armenian Fest, Croatian Fest, Harley Fest, and my favorite, Bastille Days. The Sunday is the Christmas in July pub crawl, as if there isn't enough to do. And just a heads up, Weird Fest in the Third Ward is next Saturday. I thought I'd give you a week's notice to get your freak on. Okay, hide the women and the children. Canada has a breed of new super pigs. They are domestic pigs crossbred with wild boars, and they can better tolerate the Canadian winters. Well, those Frankensteins are migrating south to the good old U.S. of A. First, Canada gives us forest fire smoke, and now porkers the size of a small Subaru. Let's double down on pigs. In Lancaster County, PA, a wild pig named Hamilton, get it? Mm-hmm. He was running free for 3 days. One report was that an enormous pig is sleeping under a trampoline in a backyard. So four police officers responded, but were unable to catch the sneaky swine. They finally captured him, Hamilton, after 3 days. The cops called him the fastest pig alive, but they might be changing the alive part of that equation. And finally, here's our financial tip of the week. You can now get your wedding catered by McDonald's. Depending on your guest list and budget, they'll provide hundreds of burgers, hundreds of four-piece chicken McNugget meals, and of course, you get fries with that. So it sounds like it wouldn't be too expensive until you factor in the airfare to Indonesia. That's the only place that McDonald's wedding catering is available. Maybe for my third, fourth, or fifth wedding. On the podcast today, we have Tom Papenfuss, Joel Driesing, and wrapping up the week, here's Kyle Tedding.
Well, thanks, Max. Another good week for stocks on the heels of what was a good first half. Continuing the run, the NASDAQ up 3.3% this week, closing at 14,114. The S&P 500 up 2.4% this week, closing the week above 4,500 at 4,506, the first time since going back to last March. The Dow Jones Industrial Average up 2.3% this week, closing at 34,511. For the year, the Dow now up 5.2%. The NASDAQ, 35.4%. And the broad S&P 500 up 18.3%. You know, Tom, I think the right place to start is to point out that we now have jumped into earnings season here feet first, with banks like J.P. Morgan and Wells Fargo this week coming out. It seems to be that the data so far points to an economy that is stronger than anticipated, certainly earlier in the year. Earnings, at least on the banks, that are better than expected. Some of the other areas still showing some weakness. And as a result, we're getting a market that continues to provide for investors, you know, despite the fact that, you know, the news continues to be mixed.
Yeah, I mean, I think we, you know, looking at where we are today, we have to be encouraged. I think we're now at this stage, at this point, that this market has come so far that you're starting to see investor sentiment change. You're starting to see more positive impact on that percentage of people who think that, well, there's some, maybe this does have some legs to it. They're not waiting for a sell-off. And that is just continues to be proven by the fact that the market gets more confident that while inflation keeps coming down, that the economy continues to be resilient. Although at the same time, we're still seeing, you know, to your point about the mixed data, we're kind of getting this Goldilocks scenario of just the right amount of negative data, just enough softening, but not scary enough. That it's just it's the softening one we want to see that we can possibly still navigate a soft landing, and so that is going to create, you know, greater confidence in people in the markets and you know, to keep this bull market going.
I think the thing that you hit on, this idea of the Goldilocks market, is kind of the magic to all of this, at least so far, and that is the Fed has done a surprisingly good job of finding an opportunity to raise rates after a decade of, you know, very, very low rates. It was inevitable that rates needed to come higher. The pace of that tightening should have caused much more damage more quickly than what we've seen. And yet it feels like this economy can support it. And so when you talk about what's the one concern that's left, it had been inflation, right? That inflation was still hotter than we hoped. And then, Joel, we got news this week on the consumer price index that continuing to point in the right direction. But I think potentially even more telling is the producer prices, which tend to lead consumer prices a little bit more of a story of what's going to come next. But both of those seem to be pointing towards the Fed continuing to get back towards target.
Right, Kyle, and we're actually seeing, talking about sentiment, we're actually seeing that show up in some of the consumer sentiment numbers, that those lower inflation levels are starting to impress consumers, and they're feeling better about the way things are, both for the whole economy and for their own personal financial situations. But you point to the producer price index, which is looking at inflation on the wholesale level. And yeah, that usually is a leading indicator of the consumer price index, which is the broadest measure that we have of inflation. And the producer price index on a year-to-year basis was up 0.1% in June. It's barely budging. So that's saying
year
a lot.
Deflation, really.
Yeah, and it's also, but it's also comparing to a higher a comparison from a year ago. But then we had the consumer price index, which is watched a lot, and that was 3%, and that's less than a third of what it was a year ago. It was 9.1% last June, the highest in 41 years, and every month since then, both the CPI and the PPI have gone down. Can I say PPI? Have gone down every single month.
And I think what's critical is, even as those numbers come down, the wage numbers have remained somewhat strong. And so now we've got a couple of consecutive months of earners making real money after inflation, earning more money this year than they did last. And that's critical for consumers being able to spend and how they feel about spending.
Right. Last week we had numbers from the Bureau of Labor Statistics that showed that the one-year raise in wages was 4.4%. So you compare that to the 3% that we got, this week on consumer price index, and yeah, wages are rising faster than inflation. And then the month before that, it was 4.4%, and it was, I think, 4.1% inflation. So that's 2 months in a row now, and we haven't had that since for more than 2 years.
And I think that's critical, and it speaks to the consumer sentiment numbers that you were talking about, rising at a pace that we haven't seen in quite a while, and most importantly, pointing to consumers that, while still maybe not feeling as good as they do historically on average, have started to show signs that they're feeling a little better about the way things are shaping up.
A year ago we had the consumer sentiment numbers at an all-time low from the University of Michigan. So now they're back up to the highest they've been since September of 2021. They're about midway between that historic low last year and where they were just entering the COVID pandemic. So yeah, it's a comeback. It's still got a ways to go, but it's encouraging.
I would just add, I think, what's interesting and what's even more encouraging about the pace and where the direction of inflation is that 40% of inflation or CPI is housing, and we still haven't really seen housing come back down yet. So all of this decline in top-line CPI has been out without its largest contributor, and so that tends to be a lagging. So we're kind of expecting that might start to come through, and just imagine where inflation can potentially go even further. Once we start to see more of those, as we start to see rental prices decrease, we still have that's probably the stickiest part of inflation right now. So I think it's just very encouraging that it's come down to this level, this magnitude, but we still haven't seen the biggest contributor really adding to that.
I think what I appreciate about that is that there's so many ways you can slice and dice the inflation number, and there's no shortage of headlines that point to, well, inflation's come down except. Right. If you strip out this thing and this thing that were the biggest contributors or detractors to inflation in the last month, well, all of a sudden you're talking about a 4.5% or a 5% number. It's not really a fair way to look at things, because last year when inflation was 9.1, we weren't saying, well, strip out the worst offenders, right? Strip out used car prices and energy and inflation's only 4.5%. Well, okay. Yeah, if you're only picking and choosing those things which are the best or worst, you're going to figure out pretty quick that you can tell whatever story you want. I think when you pick a number, you know, Joel, you said CPI was 9.1% going back to last summer. Well, if we're consistent in the way we measure, as I think we need to be, we've seen incredible progress.
Right. And another thing about the CPI to keep in mind is that CPI is the number that's used by Social Security to figure out the cost of living adjustment every year. And because it was so high a year ago, you know, people got an 8.7% increase in Social Security benefits this year. Well, now the forecasts that I'm starting to see are thinking that it's going to be more like 3%. So there's an upside and a downside to inflation going down.
I think after some of the years we saw prior to last year's cost of living adjustment, I think we'd be pretty happy with a 3% move for those individuals on Social Security. I think reflective of, you know, long-term what we expect for inflation. And so maybe not a ton of disappointment there. And again, I think this gets back to a Federal Reserve that has done about as good of a job as we could expect. The market's still maybe discounting what expectations are for rate increases. When you look at, you know, what the Chicago Mercantile Exchange puts out as far as kind of their math on how investors are betting on rates, pretty clear that investors believe another quarter point's coming here at the end of July. But as we look into the latter part of this year, they don't really see investors as putting money down on another quarter point increase. And the opposite of that is what the Fed has been saying, which is, look, we may have another 0.5% to go. We may have more if necessary. So far, the data is giving them the flexibility to do that. And I think what we heard from Jamie Dimon today with JP Morgan, talking about JP Morgan's earnings and what we're hearing from investors is, yeah, there are some downside risks. We've had them for the better part of the last year and they haven't materialized yet. So maybe they have to materialize eventually. It's the one word of caution maybe that I continue to throw out there is that we are still looking at the possibility of more weakness than what we've seen. But I think I'm encouraged by how we've gotten here so far. You know, Tom, the other piece of this is that while we've been dealing with an economy that maybe seems to be Goldilocks, you look at other areas of the world, they're entering recession or dealing with slowdowns of their own. China may be the next or the most recent example of a country that maybe the data says they're growing, but when you look at some of the underlying sentiment from Chinese consumers, Chinese businesses, some weakness going on in that area of the world.
Yeah, they are really quite struggling right now. There's been a massive slowdown in exports coming out of China. Due to a number of reasons. I mean, the war and this idea of deglobalization. A lot of people in a lot of countries are really starting to onshore and create more, plants and factories and to produce and manufacture, worried about geopolitical risks, worried about, whatever lessons we may have learned from the pandemic. So China's having a hard time. They haven't, the expectation really was prior to all of this that once they reopened, that a massive population and would start consuming again, especially energy and other, getting back to work and getting factories at full capacity. But it just hasn't materialized. And so they are, as you pointed out, kind of one of these other countries and other economies that's going in a different direction than we are. It's the same thing with kind of Europe, just on a little bit different timeline than us. Canada is still tightening as well. But they are actually going to be easing soon. And so it's just kind of fascinating that we're all experiencing different things right now.
At the same time, there's a lot of talk about deglobalization and there are a lot of steps being taken toward that. I mean, I think we're always going to have globalization. And I think Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen going to China last week, I mean, that was a really good sign that the U.S. believes that it's important to continue having economic relationships with China, that it's not something that it's not like we want them to go away.
We talk historically about how atypical it would be for another country, even a sizable economy like China, to have problems that lead the U.S. into recession. It had always been the U.S. that led the rest of the world back out of recession into growth and then into recession when the time came. That was true of the financial crisis. It was true of some of the earlier recessionary periods, that the U.S. really was the economy that led into that. But, you know, Joel, to your point, I think Yellen's visit is a clear signal that we are as dependent as we have been on the growth prospects of the rest of the world. Yeah, maybe we don't sell a ton to Chinese consumers, but they're tied to a lot of places we do sell. And so all of those things start to add up. All of those things start to pile onto each other. It doesn't mean that if China's going through a tough time, we're all of a sudden going to be going through one as well. But it does mean that I think we need to be a little more sensitive to those relationships, especially the economic ties.
Well, I think the other thing that's changed, too, as a result of the pandemic, is that we are predominantly services-based and not product-based. So we are consuming less. At least the shifting in consumption right now has been more towards services rather than products. And so that's also having an impact on what is happening in China.
You know, Joel, one of the things we point out to our listeners, our clients, our friends and family is the importance of planning. We got a story this week from Aretha Franklin's estate kind of pointing out just how messy things can be when your instructions aren't clear.
Yeah, so she died 5 years ago, and when she died, they said she didn't have a will. And, you know, at the time, I think estimates of her estate were like $18 million. And there was a court case just this week that wrapped up, and a jury in Michigan found that her will, the will that's going to count, is something that she hand-scrawled on 4 pages of paper, and it was found under a couch cushion like 4 months after she passed away. So, you know, good news is that, you know, for her family and everyone, they're getting that resolved and they can move on. The bad news is, I mean, I can't imagine how much of that estate is now going to court costs and to legal costs for having to, because that handwritten document was in dispute with another handwritten document, and just to have to go through that, you know, all that malarkey just to figure out what exactly her wishes were.
And I think we joke about, you know, how painful it is to write that check to the attorney to make sure the estate plan is correct. But the reality is it plays an important role, especially as we age, especially as our lives become more complicated, in making sure that our final wishes are followed through on. And yeah, a handwritten document found on a couch cushion is one way to get that across. I don't think you want to roll the dice and take that chance. And most importantly, I don't think you want to make things so complicated that your legacy is an extended court trial. Your legacy is, you know, tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars in court costs, when spending a few thousand now could resolve a lot of those issues. So maybe one more reminder that, you know, planning is what we do, and part of that planning is having a good estate plan in place.
And it's thinking ahead about the people that you care for.
No, I think that's the key, right, is that your legacy should not be this fight that's being dragged out in public in court. Your legacy should be those things which you want to leave behind to the people you loved, and which you've taken the time to think through well in advance and clearly document. Well, we appreciate you listening this week. Hopefully you didn't hear too much of Harley Fest going on. You know, plenty of opportunities during festival season, during the air show, to kind of get a taste of Milwaukee as a listener. We encourage you to come down and check out the festivals, check out the air show. Milwaukee's just seeing an absolute resurgence of tourism between cruise ships and festival goers. And so if you haven't taken a trip in a while, we'd love to have you in the office. We'd love to see you. We'll validate your parking, and you go hop on down to Bastille Days. You go hop on down to the air show.
The Weird Fest.
The Weird Fest. Yeah. I can't forget the Weird Fest. Thank you, Max, for pointing that one out. But with that, we enjoy doing the program for you. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.